Asgard, home of the Norse gods. In the High Hall of Gladsheim, Odin, the Lord of the Aesir, sits on a huge wooden chair, looking out through his one good eye, the left one, and drinks from a goblet made of gold, ornamented with jewels. The floor of the High Hall is dirt, scattered with rushes. It is a gloomy space, woven from rushes and smoke and mud. Any 9th century Norwegian would recognize it as a great palace. Odin wears a leather jerkin with a heavy leather belt, his leggings bound by leather thongs. His face is long and thin and drawn. Odin looks dangerous, like an aging hired killer. He is waiting for thought and memory to return to him. At his feet, two great grey wolves attend him. Lacking thought and memory, he could not even name them. He sits and waits, the gallows god, the one-eyed king of Asgard. There is a fluttering of wings. The ghost birds return to his shoulder. The ragged, grey, transparent raven hardly begins to whisper its message, and instantly he knows. He knows all they've seen. Hugin and Munin. Thought and memory. And he smiles, the Lord of the Gallows. The mead he drinks is not the mead of the Aesir. It is his mead, brewed by dwarfs from dead Kvasir's blood, a draught of liquid verse and madness. It is the mead of Odin, the Allfather, and none but Odin may drink of it. He drains the goblet. He is gone.
The Sandman, Act 2, Episode 4.
Season of Mists, Chapter 3, in which Lucifer's parting gift attracts unwanted attention, and the Dream Lord receives unwelcome visitors. There is a cavern beneath the world. This is true. You must know in your bones that this is true, although all logic argues against it. There is a cavern beneath the world, and in that cavern a man is bound upon a slab. In the cavern, there is also a woman and a snake. The woman is called Sigyn. The snake has no name. All around them is the pit, a black emptiness, which falls away in every direction. The snake is huge and evil-looking, hanging high in the darkness of the cavern, curled around an elaborate rock formation. It has a big triangular head, its eyes staring, fangs extended, tongue flickering. Green poison drips from its mouth. The woman has lank hair that may once have been yellow. She is thin to the point of emaciation, with sunken cheeks and matchstick arms, dark circles beneath her eyes. She holds a metal bowl above the man's head. The snake's venom drips from its open mouth. It falls into the bowl. The man is naked. He is bound with the frozen, bloody entrails of his son. Their son, the woman Sigyn, is his wife. The bowl fills gradually. When it is full, the woman walks carefully past the stalagmites that surround the slab and empties it into the pit. Whilst she is gone, the snake's venom drips onto the man's face. He twists and writhes as the poison eats into his flesh. His head is thrown back in pain, trying to avoid the drips of venom. See those scars around his mouth? Those were the holes made when Brock the dwarf sewed his lips together. But that pain was nothing to this. He screams as the poison drips into his eyes. And when he writhes, the earth quakes. Sigyn returns to hold the bowl over him again.
Useless whore, daughter, sluggardly crone, fox, ruined twig, excrement brain.
He curses the woman, but still she stays with him. The man, the woman, the snake, the bowl. It's not nice or pretty, but it's true, and it's necessary. It has been going on for a very long time, but that is about to change.
Enough.
From nothingness, Odin stands on the plateau, leaning on his tall wooden staff, wide-brim hat covering both his one good eye and its companion socket.
Snake, hold your venom.
The snake winds itself back in the shadows above.
Why? Why have you come here? Glad of war? To gloat at my misfortune, eh? To pass the time?
No, Loki Skywalker. I have come to talk with you.
And what makes you think I have anything to say to you, eh, blood brother? Or have you forgotten that we mingled our blood, hmm? That you swore in Amir's bones that we two were one forever?
Loki, Wolf Father, if there had been any other way, do you not think I would have taken it? But free, you would be dangerous to all of us. You are too clever, too wily, and too malevolent to be unconfined.
If I am so clever, why am I still bound here, eh? Eh, blood brother?
Ragnarok has not yet come, Loki. It has been said that Loki will be bound until Ragnarok, when the Fimbulwinter will freeze the world, when great wolves will eat the sun and the moon, when the giants will ride to war on a ship made of dead men's nails.
And on that day, Loki will break his bonds and fight Heimdall, and they both will die. Yeah, I know the old tales as well as you do, Gallows God. So?
It need not happen, Loki. Perhaps Asgard will be destroyed, but we can be gone.
Go. Go where? Hmm? To Jotunheim, where the giants live? To Svartalfheim, where the dark elves hide? Hmm? To Nidavellir, where the dwarfs toil? All those places will fall as Asgard falls.
We can go to the hell of Lucifer.
Will you go to war against the fallen, Odin? Oh, you've become senile, old man.
No. No war. Lucifer has abdicated. His domain lies empty. A protectorate of the Dreamweaver. It could be ours for the grasping. I need you, Loki.
Yes? Yes, you do. I am with you then, Odin. For now.
And they are gone. Sigyn sits by the rock slab in the dark cavern, the bowl beside her. She rests her head in her arm. She weeps, feeling suddenly undefined. Loki has gone. Stripped of their function, his lovers wait in the cavern beneath the world. The woman, the snake, waiting for him to return. Dream's throne room.
He's taking too long.
It's 3 minutes since you last said that.
I only just escaped from there with my life.
Oh, come on. You had a get-out-of-jail-free card.
A what?
It's on his forehead, Lucien. The mark of Cain.
Oh, that.
There are no free passes with Lucifer, Matthew. There's always a price to pay.
I am back.
Did you win?
No, Lucien.
Was there a fight? Did you get the woman you were looking for? Did Lucifer give you any trouble?
No. No, and no.
So, what happened, Lord?
I will tell you later.
Asgard. Thor is very strong, not very bright. He raises the hammer high over his head. He is angry. He smashes a boulder into splintered pebbles. His hair is wild and tangled, his beard a mess, his muscles distending the leather jerkin and leggings he wears.
And you trust him?
No, I do not trust him, Thunder God, but I need him. And I need you to keep him from betraying us all.
Odin leans on his staff. Loki, dressed in a belted tunic, looks much recovered from his ordeal.
But aren't you pleased to see me? It's been 1,200 years, cousin.
I'm no cousin of yours, Loki Will's father. And if you try anything, trickster, I'll split your skull. I'll smash your bones. I think this whole affair is addle-headed. But I will harness my goats.
Thor secures his chariot to two large and powerful-looking goats. He climbs aboard. Odin follows.
On Tangnost! On Tangristi! To Dreamland!
The chariot takes flight.
Aye! To Dream!
With Loki following them. The Dreaming. Morpheus's private quarters are accessed by a staircase of thin, unconnected glass slabs. The room takes up a whole floor of the Dream Palace. It is large and airy, with huge windows. There are couches and objets d'art. One is a statue of a griffin, made of white marble, a perfect analogue of the griffin who helps guard Dream's castle gate outside. There is a full-length mirror hanging in the middle of the room, irregularly shaped, with a frame of twisted bone. Morpheus stands in the center of the room, near the mirror. On his white, outstretched hand rests the twisted black key Lucifer gave him. The key to hell.
The key to hell.
Exactly. It's yours now. Perhaps it will destroy you and perhaps it won't. But I doubt it will make your life any easier.
After a moment, he raises his hand and gestures at the shards of mirror on the floor. It is whole again. Morpheus settles on the floor, in the center of the vast space, disconsolate. He looks thin and lonely. Just a man in black, holding a key. With Lucifer's abdication from hell, a vacuum has opened up. The Endless and the Old Gods are just two of the powerful factions whose actions affect us all, yet exist entirely independently of humankind. The entities who describe themselves as Lords of Chaos and Lords of Order have also been alerted to the news. They are opposing forces of mystical energy and have been locked in contention for millennia. Order.
Shift. Shift. Pristine domain. Hasty reaction. Needed. Needed.
Is this the truth? It's true. Do you call this your council?
Chaos.
Shift has occurred in balance. We need to act fast.
Order.
The Dream King is vulnerable. He will confer on us. We covet.
There is much we can do. We can do him.
Ruven
will be ambassador.
Chaos.
He will give us what we want.
Order.
Kill the king of order.
Yes.
Chaos.
Hello, Brigade.
Chaos.
It is some time later, in Dream's palace. Morpheus stands in his gallery. On its walls hang framed portraits or sculpted emblems of Dream's six siblings. In the first is a book, in the second an Ankh, in the third his own face staring back at him, in the fourth a blank, in the fifth a stylized heart, and in the sixth, a signet ring with a fishhook in it. The final frame, Delirium's, contains a swirl of wild colors. Morpheus walks to the Ankh, pulls it from the wall, and addresses the frame that held it.
My sister, I stand in my gallery and I hold your sigil. Will you talk to me?
Death's pale, elfin face, with its dark eye makeup and lipstick, her black hair tousled, forms in the frame.
Hiya, big brother. What's happening? But make it fast, I'm in kind of a hurry.
She rests her elbows on the frame, leaning forward into Dream's gallery, as if the frame were a window into her own realm.
My sister, once you berated me for not calling on you when I had a problem. And now, I have another problem, and I am coming to you for advice.
Shoot? I mean, tell me what's wrong.
Shoot. Yes. I went to hell, sister, to free the woman Nada.
I know, you went to hell and you found Lucifer had turfed everyone out.
You know?
Of course I know. And he gave you hell. the most desirable plot of psychic real estate in the whole order of created things, and it's now all yours.
So what do you advise me to do?
Do? How should I know? What do you want to do? Open a skiing resort? Turn it into a theme park? Sell it to the highest bidder? It's your choice. You've got the place. What do you want to do with it?
I don't know.
You'll figure something out, and soon, I hope. Look, I have to run. There's a whole can of worms opened up here, and no one else seems to know anything about it. I'm doing what I can. But the dead are coming back, little brother. The dead are coming back.
Far below the Silver City, the universe glitters and glistens like a child's toy. From this vantage point, galaxies coil and gleam like multicolored jewels as distant nebulas flicker and pulse. The Silver City, it cannot be visited. The City of the Angels. Beautiful, elegant, clean. It has a numinous feel, overwhelming in the same way that the gates of hell are. But instead of terror, it inspires awe. It is a place of towering silver spires. The buildings rise, minarets, domes, and towers, and flying around them, some near to us, some further away, are the angels. The inhabitants of the city were created in the same breath as the city itself, in the darkness before time. Before the first dawn, the Silver City was. It is not paradise. It is not heaven. No stars twinkle in the void around it. It exists beyond our universe. It is the Silver City that is not part of the order of created things. The inhabitants of the city are beautiful, as if carved out of marble. Perfect faces, white robes, huge wings, waiting, motionless, contemplating perfection. They possess names and identities. Perhaps they possess something we might recognize as free will. Perhaps not. Now two of them take wing. Duma, Angel of Silence, and Remiel, who is set over those who rise. Together they soar, abandon the Silver City, abandon their contemplation. They fly together, in perfect unison, shining wings bearing them effortlessly across the void. Two angels falling through the darkness toward the world. But there is another kind of darkness in which float, almost randomly, eyes and teeth. They seem like they belong to different people, although they're all the same size, eye-sized and mouth-sized, and they all dwell within the demon called Azazel.
We are outcasts. We are exiles. We are the dispossessed. For too long we have been downtrodden. No longer brothers, sisters, others. All of us, at this moment, in this our trough of despair, it may seem like the greatest setback we have ever experienced.
Azazel, a man-sized rip in space, ragged-edged, a dark hole filled with eyes and teeth. It has two vaguely arm-like appendages at each side, and it floats a few feet off a rocky outcrop in the grey mists of limbo.
But it is the greatest opportunity. Yesterday we were creatures of hell. Today we are homeless, banished to this drear limbo. But tomorrow, oh glorious tomorrow, tomorrow we shall have hell again as our domain. But
this time will be different. No longer will we be enthralled to a fallen angel. No longer shall we be vassals of some shifting triumvirate.
Clustered around Azazel's rock are demons. Demons of every shape and kind. Evil, strange, unpleasant things of every size, gender, and type. Some are naked, some in dinner suits, some incapable of wearing clothes. They stare up at the nothingness of Azazel, which raises a pseudo-limb high in salute. The demons cheer him on.
This will be a new hell. A forward-looking hell that recognizes individual worth, in which a demon can raise its head or any other important member high and say, "This is my land, and no one is ever going to take it away from me again." Today, I will go to the Dream King, and I will demand he give us, return to us, the land that is rightfully ours. And I will not go alone. With me will go the Merkin, she whose womb spawns spiders. The Merkin has been my aid in war and peace. She will be invaluable in convincing the Dream Master of the wisdom of our case.
In the crowd, a pair of demons stand with the body of a human woman bound at their feet. The female demon is the Merkin. She has a head like an upturned dog's skull. It has teeth at its crown, red skin stretched over it, and three eyes set off-center, like glass buttons. The Merkin isn't naked. Her incongruously female body is draped in an expensive evening dress with shoulder-length gloves.
And Corinzon, once a creature of Beelzebub's, and most foully betrayed by that shifty dupe of Lucifer, now one of us.
Next to the Merkin stands an old adversary of the Lord of Dreams. Corinzon, the demon, with wide eyes and two mouths full of sharp pointed teeth, one beneath the other, stands preening, dressed in a ripped t-shirt, stockings and garter belt. Both mouths are grinning. Since he lost his duel with Morpheus in hell, Corinzon has a new set of scars over his body and one side of his face, a legacy of his time with agony and ecstasy.
Yes, until the end of time, Prince Azazel!
In an instant, they are alone. Just Azazel, the Merkin, and Corinzon, and the bound human woman who lies at their feet.
The dream creature will of course accede to our wishes. He must see that hell is ours by right. He must return our lands to us. But if he fails to see reason, we have something to help him make up his mind. He is a reasonable being, after all, and he will be willing to trade.
Azazel looks down at their captive, her hands and feet bound with what looks like barbed wire, staring around wildly. She was the queen of an African civilization 10,000 years gone, who Morpheus loved and lost.
Isn't that right, little Miss Nada?
Kaiko.
The Dreaming. today, Morpheus's castle is perched high up on a twisted skein of volcanic rock. Flying away from it is a tiny black dot. It is Matthew the Raven, flying down over the forest towards a cave entrance, halfway up a mountainside.
Eve! You there?
Eve, widow of Adam, and the mother of Cain and Abel, emerges from the cave she lives in. She has grown old and overweight. Her hair is grey and scraggy, and she wears a shapeless dress.
Matthew, welcome back. What news?
Of the boss? Nothing really. He's still hiding out in his suite in the castle. He won't talk to anyone. Not even me.
He's like a little child.
Eve reaches down her hand to Matthew, who hops up onto it. She now looks middle-aged. Her grey hair is streaked with black. Her face is less lined.
Oh, and he's moved the castle to the top of a mountain.
He's expecting unwelcome visitors, then. He only does that when he's feeling antisocial.
Eve brings Matthew up to look at him, her hands encircling his folded wings and body. She now looks even younger. Her hair is all dark.
I'm sure this will sort itself out. These things usually do.
I hope so. I've never seen him this out of it before.
No. But you have not been with us long, little Raven. He gets black moods on him sometimes. Worse than this one sounds. Much worse.
Is there anything we can do?
Of course, my darling. We can wait.
It is twilight in Dream's private quarters. All the windows show is a dark greyness. No lamps are lit. Morpheus sits against a wall, his knees drawn up to his chin. He looks like someone who hasn't slept for weeks. Nearby is the white marble statue of the Griffin. It speaks.
My lord.
Oh, go away.
We have visitors at the gate. My lord, there are many of them.
Tell them to go away. I am not receiving visitors at this time.
But they are envoys, my lord. I recognize a few of them. Some have been here before as honored guests. Some of them are gods. All of them are puissant.
Gods.
We gatekeepers cannot keep them all out should they take it to force their way in. Not unless you lend us power, Lord. Not unless you lend us strength.
Enough.
What shall we do, Lord?
Let them in.
I tell you again! If you do not open this fat-sucking door, then Mahama Mjolnir will smash it to toothpicks!
Thor's eyes bulge. A vein in his forehead throbs.
Who? I am the mighty Thor!
He stands at the head of a disparate group of people at the main gate of Dream's castle. It is a wooden door, some 20 feet high, set into a rock wall with its three guardians, the real griffin to the left of the gate, the dragon-like wyvern curled around its upper lintel, and the hippogriff, a winged horse, on the right. They look down upon the assembled throng. Even the tallest of them, and most of them are tall, are dwarfed by the door and its guardians. Many are clustered together, each in their own group. Here, Azazel, the Merkin, Coranzon. There, we see Loki, Odin, and Thor, brandishing his hammer. The two angels, Remiel and Duma, hang in the air above, gazing down soberly at the scene. To one side, the three Egyptian gods, Anubis, Bes, and Bast, stand in a little cluster. A tall, bronzed man, with a bald head, earrings, and loincloth, carries a large cardboard box. Nearby is a little girl, her hair in pigtails, holding a balloon. There is a single Japanese samurai warrior in ornamented clothes, and a small group of other supplicants.
I have spoken to my lord. He apologizes for the delay and bids you all welcome. He will greet you in his throne room. Enter and announce yourselves.
The gathering moves into the lobby of Dream's castle, led by the cohort from Asgard, Odin in front.
I am Odin Allfather of the Aesir. With me are my son Thor of the Aesir and Loki Skywalker, the child of giants but Aesir by right of blood brotherhood. We seek the key to hell.
The Egyptian gods follow. The jackal-headed Anubis, the cat goddess Bast, and Bes, a dwarf with a large bearded face and a tail.
I am Anubis, lord of the dead of the Nile Delta. With me are Bast, lady of cats, and Bes, a household deity. We seek the grant of the hell that was once Lucifer's.
The wide-eyed, richly dressed, black-bearded Japanese god moves forward. By his side hangs a sword.
To his shame, this one is Susanoo no Mikoto. His brave, swift, impetuous male augustness, son of Izanagi. His augustness, the male who invites. This one comes alone. There's a discussion that might be had at some point concerning territory.
Azazel floats forward, the whole of black emptiness filled with eyes and teeth.
I am Azazel, formerly a prince of hell. With me are the Merkin, mother of spiders, and Corinzon, once a duke of the Eighth Circle. We seek the return of our lands.
Corinzon is now wearing evening dress, with a rose in his buttonhole. From behind him, the huge genie, carrying the box in his heavily jeweled hands, steps forward.
I have the honor to be the personal genie of Lord Kilderkin, a manifestation of the Lords of Order, here incarnated for us in the form of this box. He too wishes to discuss the disposal of the realm that was once Lucifer's.
Aha!
Toddling up now is the small girl, no older than four, wearing clown makeup and a red nose. She's dressed in something like an oversized pillowcase with holes cut in it for her head and arms to poke out through. It drags on the floor. She's holding the string of her red balloon and looks small and vulnerable.
I is Shivering Jemmy of the Shallow Brigade. And I is a princess of chaos. And I is very important. And we want hell too. That's what.
I am the angel Remiel, set over those that rise. My companion is Duma, angel of silence. We are here to observe.
Morpheus appears at the door of his throne room in a formal robe, jet black, with stars twinkling in its lower part and huge sleeves. He holds the key to hell.
You are all welcome. Enter my throne room. I welcome you to the heart of the dreaming. I extend my hospitality to you all. Suites for you are being prepared, and your wishes regarding nourishment and recreation will be catered for, insofar as we are able to provide. You all, or almost all, seek the same thing. This key, and all it represents. The empty hell that once was Lucifer's. But you have all journeyed far to come here this day. You will be shown to your rooms. Tonight there will be a banquet for you and for any others who may arrive betimes. And tomorrow... tomorrow... we'll talk.
Dream's guests disperse. The throne room falls quiet. Dream has much to contemplate. This responsibility weighs heavily upon him, and its consequences are not confined to the dreaming. Elsewhere, with hell emptied and its gates sealed, the dead are coming back.